Welcome to our Facebook Live show, Chris Graham and Scott German. And you can see that we've done some work on our various sets, mine in Waynesboro and Scott in Fluvanna County. And Scott, I'd say how are things going out your way, but not much is happening these days, is it?
I have moved from this seat, though.
Oh, you have moved from the seat? Okay, yeah.
Yeah, a couple of times. I had to, you have to sleep some, so.
That's a good, well, you got to go sleep, got to walk the dogs every once in a while. And so, yeah, we're going to try to talk some UVA sports today and other sports as well. For those who are joining us on our Facebook live stream, especially the live stream, if you're watching the archive version, you can't comment now and have us respond to it. But if you're watching us now, you have questions, comments, anything you want us to address, as long as it's appropriate, we'll do so. So just go ahead and post a comment on our Facebook live stream and let us know. We're working on something that should be fun. Scott's doing the heavy lifting on this, but we're putting together something I've been talking about doing for a couple of weeks called the Ultimate ACC Tournament. And the concept is picking the best season from every one of the 15 ACC, current member ACC schools. That means no Maryland, no South Carolina. But it does include Boston College, Virginia Tech, Miami, Florida State, Syracuse, Pitt. God, I'm throwing them all out there.
Louisville,
yeah, thank you. Yeah, the other seven, right? Because the eight of us and then the other seven. And picking their best season, and eventually we'll seed them, and then eventually we'll play, we'll argue through a tournament. Some are easier than others. Some are harder than others. Scott, you were assigned the task of figuring out the best season for each of the 15 schools. Take us into how you did this.
I cheated.
Which means you're a good politician. I'm going to vote for you for something this November.
Now some of it I knew because I've been a fan of the ACC for as long as I've been alive. But I also was able to use this.
Your germ-free copy of the ACC Tournament Guide from 2020, one of the things we picked up on our way from Greensboro back home.
Right, which gives you a wealth of information. In these times, it's a great read. But you're right, there were some schools that, well, actually it's challenging for all schools because if you look at it from both ends of the spectrum, you've got Duke, North Carolina with multi-years of national championships. And then you've got the new schools, the expansion teams, if you will, Tech, Pitt, Louisville, the teams, the schools you just mentioned, and then some schools that haven't had what you would call an illustrious or, aren't really known as basketball schools, Florida State, Miami. So that made it a little more difficult. But upon delving into it, you have to go back a few years, but some of these schools really had some great seasons 35, 40 years ago.
And one of the ground rules, Scott and I texted about this last night, because at first, if you're looking at the new schools, Florida State joined in the early 90s and the other schools joined in the 2000s. And I think even as recently as 2014, that was Louisville and Syracuse being added to the league. If you only looked at their ACC seasons, some of them would have not much to go on here. So we opened it up so that you could include prior good seasons. And so let's just go down a list, Scott. I got the list in front of me. Boston College, it's hard for us to remember now, but Boston College had some good teams back in the days.
Their best season, in my opinion, was their first year. I'm trying to look at my notes. Their first year that they were in the ACC. 2006, Boston College went all the way to the Sweet 16. Played for the championship for the ACC tournament, I believe. Can't see, but I know they went I think they did play for the tournament championship. But Boston College had some not really as much since they've been members of the ACC, but they had some really good teams. And going back in their archives, it was I chose 2006, but even earlier than that, they had some really good teams, some 25, 26 win seasons.
Yeah, they had some really good teams in the Big East. I remember those teams too. Back in those days, they had some really good runs. And yeah, that early ACC when they had Al Skinner as the coach. I mean, I remember you and I and Jerry Ratcliffe having one of our long freewheeling conversations once about various things, and Al Skinner came up, and Jerry, like, I can't figure out what the heck Boston College was thinking getting rid of Al Skinner. It's been all downhill since then. But that 2006 team will be the representative in our ultimate ACC tournament. Going in alphabetical order here now, Clemson. Clemson doesn't have, again, their football program, not a very storied basketball history, but a couple of good teams, and you picked which team?
Well, again, Clemson, you know, is another one of those schools that you wouldn't think it, but if you do the research, go through their archives, they had some really good teams. I chose a 1980 team. They lost. They went all the way to the Elite Eight, losing in the Elite Eight. But yeah, Clemson, you know, again, that's not a traditional basketball school, but if you look hard enough, you can find some really good teams. And it, you know, I don't want to give away everything, but it goes even through some of the other two traditional, non-traditional basketball schools in the ACC, Florida State and Miami.
So here's one of those where it's hard. Duke. Lots of good teams to pick here, and you can't really you can and can't go wrong picking any of those five national champions. Who did you pick?
I chose the 1999 Duke, and it was. It's kind of disheartening to see. You know, we're excited as Cavalier fans. We've got one. I think we're going to have more soon. But to go back and look at Duke, it was tough. But I went and chose the 1999 season because I actually went back into their archives and looked at their games, and they rarely had – they were perfect in the ACC that year. And they dominated. They dominated games in 1999 like we did in our national champion. They rarely had a competitive game.
Yeah, so many good teams to pick from there, and that is a standout team. Now, this one surprised me. FSU. What I remember is that when they first came in the ACC, they won their first game in Chapel Hill. FSU's first ever ACC game was in Chapel Hill. They won by 12 points, and that team had Bobby Surra, Sam Cassell, Charlie Ward, all guys who played in the NBA. But there was a better team in FSU's history before the ACC. But talk about that team.
Well, the 1972 Florida State team, and I haven't really had the chance to, because my cheat notes, the ACC tournament handbook, really doesn't delve into individual seasons. But I have sources to get that information. But the 72 Florida State team, and that's on my to-do list today to look back at that team. They actually played for the national championship. And this was in a tournament, an NCAA tournament that wasn't 64 teams either. Right. So, you know, there was the 72 team, you know, they're competing with some really good teams out there, one of which was UCLA. So, yeah, that had to be – I'm really looking forward to looking back at that 72 season for Florida State. To make it all the way to the national championship game, they must have had a heck of a team.
Yeah, yeah, that was in that run of 10 championships for UCLA in 12 years. And so just to play them was an honor, right? Georgia Tech's another one that we forget because of recent years they've struggled so much. And then, of course, there was that great run, the long period of time under Bobby Cremins. But here's one. I kind of remembered it, Scott, and then I kind of forgot it. The team you picked of theirs went further than any of those teams ever did. Talk about this team.
Yeah, the 2004 team actually played for the national championship, losing to a Big East foe, Connecticut.
Yeah.
You know, in researching Georgia Tech, you know, Georgia Tech basketball just literally fell off the cliff when they pushed Bobby Cremins out the door. And you wonder the parallel between – because all of a sudden Cremins – winning 18, 20 games a year, getting them into the NCAA tournament wasn't good enough. And they literally forced Cremins out. It's kind of a parallel to Virginia football when all of a sudden George Welsh winning 9 games a year wasn't good enough. And George kind of gently shoved out the door. Well, since Bobby Crimmins has left Georgia Tech, they really haven't had a, you know, since 2004, they really have not been much of a, had much of a presence on the national radar. They've gone through a heck of a lot of coaches and probably had this crisis we're in right now, this epidemic, they may have been going through another coach. That may have been the only thing that saved Josh Pastor and Danny Manning's jobs right now.
That's a great point. I will say though, now, this was Paul Hewitt. He was the coach. And I'm looking him up real quick. It was early in his tenure, and I want to pull it up here. This was his fourth year there, and it was such a random thing. They were 9-7 in the ACC. They were 23-9, kind of barely made the NCAA tournament that year, but then went all the way to the championship game, as you mentioned. And then the next year, they were second round NCAA. The next year after that, they had 11-17 record. He basically, after this, he had this one run. When he was coached there, he was coached there for 11 years, went 190 and 162. He won 6 NCAA tournament games in his 11 years there. 5 were this season. This was just the anomaly of all anomalies this particular season. And then he went to George Mason and flamed out there. So, I mean, this is like going to Vegas and coming back home a millionaire pretty much for Paul Hewitt. This was the one year in his whole coaching career where things went right. But you're right. Generally speaking, after Crimmins, I mean, this one lucky year out of the last 20, because he took over, Paul Hewitt took over in 2000. And we're in 2020 now. The last Georgia Tech program, remember back in the 80s, he had, when they had Mark Price and Bruce Dalrymple and the big guy who played for the Lakers, John Sally, Ivan Joseph, and then, you know, the Lethal Weapon 3 kids, Kenny Anderson and Brian Oliver and Scott, and all those guys. And then for 20 years, they've been, except for that one year, this particular year, they've been irrelevant. It's amazing to see.
Yeah, and I remember not actually having a direct conversation with Dave Odom, but in on a conversation that Dave Odom was having in John Paul Jones Arena for a game he was there just recently, talking about, or within the last couple of years, talking about what a mistake Georgia Tech made by letting Bobby Crimmins get away. That he was the face of Georgia Tech basketball. And, again, I think it was almost sort of akin to Virginia's not being satisfied with George Welch winning 7 or 8 games. They thought they could do better. And, Georgia Tech's a pretty highly esteemed academic university. So and it's not, they're in a pro town. And they're not the number one bill on the marquee. So it's a difficult school to recruit at. Bobby Crimmins was doing something right. And I know that looking back, that they probably wished that Bobby Crimmins would probably still been coaching there now.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And plus, then we wouldn't have to listen to him talk about basketball. Because, man, Bobby Crimmins was a fun guy from an interview standpoint. But listening to him talk for 2 hours is just an hour and 59 minutes too many, really.
He's horrible. He is his –
It's just the accent. I mean, you know, he's – oh, my gosh. I mean, it's almost like a cartoonish New York accent.
Somebody please hire Bobby. I think he did go to Charleston Southern or somewhere.
College of Charleston. I think it was College of Charleston.
Yeah, it was relatively successful there. But, you know, those coaches that are coaching at the ACC level, that doesn't always transition that they can just step back and – I don't know. If it's just recruiting, they just can't – recruit the players there just because
you don't have the same resources at a Charleston that you do at an ACC school, right?
So. Yeah, they're not competing against the Dukes and the Carolinas and Charleston Southerns are competing. Their big games are against UNC Wilmington.
Yeah, and you're trying to find a 3-star to convince to come to your place, not a 5-star. You're not getting Kenny Anderson to go to Charleston.
No.
So Louisville, and Scott, I'm shocked and surprised you didn't pick the team that had a banner that got taken down as your representative from Louisville. Actually, I'm not. I just have to – every time I talk about Louisville, I have to work in that they had a banner hanging and they don't have it hanging anymore. So you didn't pick that one. Which Louisville team did you pick?
Well, let's talk about the vacated national championship. So I've been to the Yum Yum Center, whatever it's called, a couple of times. And it's really funny because – on the walking around the outside, I guess it would be the areas where the restaurants, the snack areas are located. As you walk around the Yum Center, they have pictures of all their national championship teams, which I think they're three or four. And they have a picture of the 2013 national championship. And it does say Louisville Cardinals 2013 national champions. Big print. And in wee little print at the bottom of the picture, it says vacated national championship. So I threw that out because they did vacate it. But I chose the 86 team coached by Denny Crum. They had some great players. And again, when I had choices to make, like Duke, Carolina, where they have multiple national championships, I kind of went back and looked at their season. And Louisville was a member of the Metro Conference, if you can remember that.
Virginia Tech was in that conference, but I think Florida State may have been in there.
Florida State, Virginia Tech. And they rarely had a competitive game. Right. Even in the NCAA tournament, their run to the national championship up until they got to the Elite Eight, the early games were just complete, you know, annihilations of their opponents. So they, Denny Crum was, you know, he wasn't, he was a great coach, great recruiter, but I don't think Denny had the bar wasn't that high on the scruples on Denny Crum either. Denny probably would fit right in with the Rick Pitinos and the John Calipari's right now. Louisville had some issues too with the NCAA. They were always a step ahead of them.
Well, another reason I like that Louisville team too, I had to refresh my memory. I wanted to make sure I was right about this, so I looked it up while you're talking. That 1986 Louisville team beat Duke in the national championship game. So, I mean, if you're going to pick somebody that beat Duke.
Well, and that was the other reason I chose them.
Among the key reasons, yeah, no vacated title, they beat Duke. Never Nervous Purpose, that's what I remember about that year. Never Nervous Purpose Ellison, who didn't really do much in the NBA, but he was a freshman and he played really good in that tournament. I remember this Miami team you're going to talk about. That was I covered that ACC tournament this year. So Miami, another one of those football schools that doesn't necessarily have a great track record in basketball, but this team was a really good one.
Yeah, they won the ACC regular season in 2013. That was probably and they also first year that they swept the Carolina schools.
And they won the ACC tournament that year as well. So they swept the regular season and tournament.
Yeah, they won both the regular season and the ACC tournament. And they went to the they lost in the Sweet 16. So it's for a school that's not traditionally known to be a basketball school, that was pretty simple to peg the 2013 season as their best ever.
And I'm pulling this up real quick because I remembered something about this team. And I'm going to see if I can find it real quick. That's wrong one.
Was that the Miami team?
That Miami team. I want to see if I can get the roster up here real quick because I think there's a player there that you will be surprised. Shane Larkin, I remember, was a point guard. He didn't do much in the NBA, but man, seeing him courtside that four, 3 or 4 days, one of the quicker guys I've ever seen.
Durant Scott. Are you thinking of Scott? Durant Scott?
No, I was actually thinking of somebody else that played at Miami. I thought it was Jimmy. I thought Jimmy Graham played on that team, and he didn't. So I'm glad I didn't say that out loud.
Well, that 2013 season that they swept the regular season and – isn't it funny how – that's only 7 years ago, but how many people remember that?
I know.
Miami won both the regular season and the ACC team, ACC tournament. And they placed four players on the all-ACC tournament team. First two on the first team, two on the second. They had a really good team. And yet, I don't remember much about it. And it was just 6 years ago.
I only remember it because that was the first time that I covered an ACC tournament as Augusta Free Press. Jeff Fife went with me that year. Jeff Fife did his best Scott German impression in the sense that he would fake naively walk into places he wasn't supposed to. Scott German's really good at this too. And Scott, you'll appreciate this story. So that year, the tournament still ended on a Sunday. So Jeff takes my video camera. I had a little video camera. So he said, I'm gonna go do something. I'm gonna go find something to shoot. So he takes my video camera, walks down a hallway past people he's not supposed to walk past. And he ends up where the two teams are in there within a few feet of each other doing their little pregame huddle, chant, dance, whatever they do. And he gets video of that. And then he says, somebody comes, taps him on the shoulder and says, you're not supposed to be here. And so he comes back to me with a big smile on his face saying, I got something that I'm not supposed to have. So Scott Sherman, you've only done that once or twice in your lifetime.
Yeah, but yeah, that's pretty cool. And I know Jeff, and I'll give him that credit for that. But unless you tell me he went to the Dick Vitale gala in Dick's house, then I'm not that impressed.
We might have a few more of these to run before their actual sports play. So I got that particular story itself might be an entire show. So we're going to say.
I think I'm past the statute of limitations for being arrested for trespassing.
Well, plus you've already told Dick that you did that. So.
Yeah, I did tell him that. Yeah.
He did. You haven't.
It didn't resonate in him how I could have possibly come up with the $10,000 that you were required to donate to get an invitation to his house.
Unless the federal marshals are at your door sometime in the next hour, so I think you're good.
I just chalk it up to it's not my fault he didn't have enough security in his front yard.
Oh yeah, wait till you hear this story, folks. The whole story here, that'll be great. Moving on from Miami, a team that we don't remember from just 7 years ago, Pitt. Now this isn't a Pitt team that played in the ACC, but Pitt had some good runs, and this particular Pitt team made it pretty far in the NCAA tournament.
Yeah, they went all the way to the Elite Eight, losing in the Elite Eight. But you have to go pre-ACC. But they, you know, if you look, they've had some, up until the last 3 or 4 years, they had some really good teams in the conference. And again, I don't know exactly what the situation was with Jamie Dixon, whether they pushed him out or he left, but they've fallen off the map since Jamie Dixon left Pitt. The 2009 team was the team that I chose as Pitt's all-time best team. Here's an interesting fact about that. And I was just looking at my notes. The 2009 team that went to they didn't win the ACC regular season or tournament, but they did. They were number 16, number six seed, and they went all the way to the Elite Eight. But that was a team that I look back and it was kind of an anonymous type team, because in the ACC tournament, they did not have a first or second team all tournament player. But yet they, you know, pulled it together in the NCAA tournament, advanced all the way to the Elite Eight. And I think that would have been a Jamie Dixon coach team, right?
I'm looking up to make sure. Yeah, because Ben Howland had been his predecessor. Howland eventually went to UCLA, went to a couple of Final Fours there. Dixon was there from 2004 to 2016. And you're right, man. You look at the record there. Let's see. Out of the 13 years he was the head coach, they went to 11 NCAA tournaments and then pushed him out the door, and they haven't been back to one since.
Right. You know, sometimes the old saying, be careful what you wish for.
Yeah.
You might get.
That 2019, 31 wins, 15 in the Big East. That was a stretch where, boy, going back to 2006, they won 25, 29, 27, 31, 25, 28 is what they did. So, and then, yeah, hey, we're not good enough. We need to do something else with this program.
Yeah,
pretty smart.
That wasn't good enough for a team that was playing in the shadows of the AC, playing in a conference. Well, I guess they were in the Big East.
They were in a big. Well, no, actually, Jamie Dixon did coach in the ACC. He went to TCU.
That's right. Yes,
it's been phrased as he went there because it was going back home. But you know, he was
pushed out the door.
He was advised to look at his career options, definitely. Yeah. So that was a really good Pitt team, won 31 games. That was a year in the Big East where they had just so much depth that year.
If you skip to, if you will, this is interesting. Wake Forest.
We'll skip to Wake Forest. Okay, we'll skip past it. I'm going to make a mental note. We're at Notre Dame. Going down to Wake Forest. Now, yes, Wake has been irrelevant for a long, long time. But those of us who've been around long enough know that they had some really, really good teams. And this one, you picked out a really, really, really good team.
Yeah. And this was a no-brainer as far as I'm concerned. And I happen to be very fortunate to really respect Dave Odom. I think Dave Odom is one of the first most finest men in coaching NCAA basketball. I've known him since he was Terry Holland's assistant at Virginia.
He did do one thing wrong, though. He raised a really good son who became a coach.
Yeah. But also
NBC's coach. Yeah.
Ryan's a great guy, and he'll go far. He's a really good guy. If you got to lose that kind of game, then we don't want to go down that road. We got enough problems we don't want to rehash UNBC, but it's not hard to pick Wake Forest's best season. They went all the way to the Elite Eight. They lost in the Elite Eight, but the thing that I think ends all discussions is that year they had Tim Duncan, and Tim Duncan was the National Player of the Year and probably one of the best big men ever to play college basketball. So how do you not say that that's Wake's best ever team? They also had some pretty good supporting cast. They had along with Duncan, was Childress a part of that team, or was that
Childress was part of the previous year's team, the 1995 team? He was on that's the year he scored 108 points in the ACC tournament in three games and made almost everything he threw up from halftime of the first game on.
He was in the 95 team.
Weekend.
Tony, again, from someone that's followed ACC basketball, it's fun. It's kind of ironic how some of these names can just get away from me. Tony Rutland, was just a great player, and he was a thorn in the side of the UVA. He lit up University Hall every time. University Hall was his second home. He just tore it. If you look at the stats, and I have because I've got far too much time on my hands, I hated Tony Rutland.
Here's another one, Rusty LaRue. I hadn't thought of that name in a while, but Rusty LaRue, the white kid with red hair.
Yeah. Did he not play quarter? Was he a football player?
He was a football player as well. 6'6", roughly 6'5", or 6'6", shot threes. I'm looking at the numbers. Shot 46% from three. But, yeah, he was another one that, just skinny, tall, skinny kid who could shoot like a madman.
Yep.
That was a pretty good team. Let's look here now. So going back, can I go back into our order now?
I'm sorry.
Oh, that's okay. I don't want to lose anybody here. I don't want the Notre Dame fan base, for example, to get mad at me. And you talked, Scott, about Miami 2013 and not remembering, very, very easily that team. This is just 2015 you're picking, so I'm already giving away who you picked. But this was a really good Notre Dame team that I believe won the ACC tournament that year and went to the Elite Eight, as you're getting ready to tell us more of the story. I think they went 32-6 that year, and I don't remember any of that.
They did. They were 32-6. They beat Carolina in the Atlantic Coast Conference in the ACC championship game. They went all the way to the Elite Eight, losing in the Elite Eight. So you don't remember that team. It's 5 years ago.
And did they lose Kentucky in the Elite Eight?
They did. They lost to Kentucky.
The undefeated at the time Kentucky team, and they played them really, really well. I mean, and I say I don't remember. I have flashbacks of it. But until I saw this, until I saw your list that you sent me, no, I just had completely blocked that out.
So here's some names. So now you're going to remember them real quick. Pat Connington.
Well, of course, the pitcher who also plays in the NBA, one of your guys, right? You got drafted by the Orioles.
Right. That year, that of course, if they win the ACC championship, they're going to have some players on the first on the All ACC tournament team. They had three on the first team. They had Connington. They had the Jaron Grant. Here's a name I have no remembrance of: Steve Vistoria.
I do remember him. I think he was a forward.
And they had three players on the first team, and then Demetrius Jackson was an All-ACC second team player.
And that 2015 year, for them to have success that year, think of what else happened in ACC in 2015. Duke eventually wins a national championship. Virginia started that season 28-1, won 30 games that year. Carolina beat us in the ACC tournament semifinals. They were pretty good that year.
Yeah, that was at the Capitol Center, right?
No, it was at, it was in Greensboro.
Oh, I'm sorry.
The Capitol Center was 2016.
That's right.
That's how deep the ACC was that year, that Notre Dame was at best the fourth best team in the league that year, and they won 32 games that year.
Yeah. That was a pretty deep ACC.
That was a deep. So now we're going to move on to NC State. And Scott, this team that you picked, this team broke both of our hearts. And for a lot of our viewers out there who are UVA basketball fans, this team is a team, you know, you hate UMBC because you're supposed to, because that's more fresh. But this one, Scott, this one actually, I think, is the one that hurts the most.
Yeah, because most people felt like that was the year that Virginia with Sampson was destined to win the national championship. And we didn't. We got beat. I think it was the Elite Eight.
NC State beat us in the ACC championship game, ACC tournament championship game, and then the West Regional Final, the Elite Eight, yes.
In the Elite Eight. This is a no-brainer.
That was Ralph's last game, too. I mean, that was it. That was the end of career for Ralph.
Yeah, and out in the middle of nowhere. I think that game was in Utah.
It was
Salt Lake City. But this is a no-brainer for State. And I mean, if you could ask 100 State fans, and they would, 101 of them would tell you they agree that the 1983 team, and that was the national championship year and the last second shot, and everybody remembers Jim Valvano running on the floor looking for somebody to hug. Was it Thurl Bailey?
Thurl Bailey was on that team. Lorenzo Charles.
Derek Wittenberg, who later went on to coach State, wasn't it? Or no, it was
low coach State.
Yeah.
Disaster.
Which is another topic for maybe another post Facebook Live, is great players that turned out to be disastrous head coaches. Yeah, Cindy Lowe, Matt Daugherty.
And Danny
Manning. The list can go on and on and on.
Danny Manning didn't play in the ACC, but he deserved a mention there as well, right? So
who was that? Yeah.
Danny Manning.
Oh, Danny Manning. Yeah, well, I didn't say just ACC players, just great players, college.
Yeah.
That turned out to be disastrous head coaches.
Well, and we could be soon adding Patrick Ewing to that list, right? Yeah. So,
I mean, Patrick Ewing is probably within a year of that.
Yeah.
It goes on and on. Chris Mullen.
As soon as I mentioned Ewing's name, I started thinking Mullen as well. So great play.
And to some degree, you can even add Johnny Dawkins to that list because he's been a journeyman coach.
He's been a journeyman, and pretty much every time he gets fired somewhere, he ends up back at Duke under Coach K's wing so he can rehabilitate his career.
But he's never established himself as a head coach.
No. And, you know, and that's the thing. We always talk about, like, you know, because every guy who's a coach is a former player, but the former great players seem to be the ones who struggle the most. And it's almost like, Tony Bennett, I wouldn't say he was a great player. He leads. He's still the career leader and probably always will be the career leader in NCAA 3-point percentage because he shot just under 50%. He played in the NBA for 3 years, but he wasn't the level of a Manning, or he wasn't the level of a Ewing or Mullen.
He was a notch, at least a notch below those players.
Yeah, and because Mullen played on the
Dream. They were NBA players. Some of them all-star NBA players.
Oh, yeah, they were all-star Dream Team NBA players. And Tony was a good NBA player, but only played the 3 years. But usually it's the best coaches are the guys who sat on the bench, who had to scrap to get playing time, and had to learn the game because they weren't as physically gifted as the other guys. And maybe it's an issue where the guys who were so good, they know what made them good, but it's hard for them to translate and say, hey, just do what I did because I did it and it worked, you know, and it's maybe hard for them to translate that.
Right. And the same, if you cross sports, it certainly applies in baseball. And we could have an hour and a half Facebook Live on just that, on great players, Hall of Fame career players that turned out to be disastrous managers. Ted Williams, Pete Rose. It goes on and on and on. Your best managers turns out to be the managers that had to scrap their way. Some didn't even make it to the major leagues. Earl Weaver, Buck Showalter, a lot of great managers. Sparky Anderson. That list goes on and on. That struggled in the bush leagues and had to just fight for everything they got, and they turned out to be great managers. So yeah, that's another great topic.
So we'll move to the other big team there in that triad, North Carolina, another one where it's difficult to pick because they had so many champions. But looking at the one you picked, Scott, this is the one you needed to pick.
Yeah, with the 1982 team that went on to win the national championship. And we know, I'm looking at my records that I researched. The 82 team was a stacked team. If you look back to, other than a few select games during that season, their battles with Virginia, they just decimated their opponents. They went through the ACC, Virginia, North Carolina. That had to be, again, when you have multiple national championship banners, it's kind of hard to pick one over the other. But again, I would say if you ask most Carolina fans, especially if you're someone my age, it was able to see them up close. I mean, that's a team that was just completely loaded. I mean, every game they had no weakness.
Here's all you got to say about that team. Michael Jordan played on it, and he was the third best player.
He was the third best player on that team.
That's how good that team was. He was a freshman. He made the big shot to win the championship, as you've seen on the commercial the last few weeks. That's when Mike became Michael. But he was the third best player. James Worthy was the number one pick in the draft coming out of this team, out of this draft, out of this season. And Sam Perkins was a better player than Jordan on this team. Yeah. So that's a pretty good team. That's a pretty good team.
I think they had Matt Doherty on that team
Matt Doherty on the team as well. Yeah. Yeah. I mean,
Dean had a stable of five-star recruits.
I mean, I remember interviewing Curtis Staples for the book that Patrick Hyten and I did back in 2006, the Mad About You book on the history of University Hall. And I interviewed Staples, and he was committed to Carolina at first. He went to the same high school as George Lynch in Roanoke. And he said he was a Carolina recruit. And then he said Phil Ford came to visit him. He'd already committed, but he hadn't signed. And Phil Ford came to visit him during his senior season and was just, you know, after a game talking. And Staples says, yeah, so I'm looking forward to being there next year and getting a chance to play. And, you know, I think I'll start next year. And he said, Phil Ford told him, oh, no, you're not starting. What do you mean I'm not starting? I'm a McDonald's All-American. Well, we've got seven of those. I mean, you know, that's what it was like back then. And so that's how Staples ends up at Virginia because he got a chance to play at Virginia. He didn't have to sit on the bench for 2 years. So let's move on. Syracuse, another team where we're picking from a new addition to the ACC. We still call them new because, you know, Florida State in some ways is still new to the ACC. But this Syracuse team is an obvious one, the one you picked. So, Scott, which one did you take?
They won one national championship, 2003, the national championship team. By far their best team. Of course, you know, Syracuse has had some run-ins with the NCAA as well. So they've had some they haven't had a vacated national championship team, but they've had a couple of years where they weren't eligible for the NCAA tournament. But yeah, I chose the 2003 team. You know, again, they just had a lot. If you look at their roster, again, this is 16 years ago. So if your memory is a little fuzzy on this, it's a little more understanding, but you know, they had some good players. They had a lot of good players on that team, on the 2003 team. But they didn't have any the fact that I looked at that I was surprised, the 2003 team did not – well, they weren't a member of the ACC in 2003, right? They were still a Big East team, yeah. So that's why your memory may not be quite as, you know, good about Syracuse because they weren't competing in the ACC.
They were that year 30-5, first in the Big East that year. They had a guy named Carmelo Anthony you might have heard of. He only played the 1 year there, of course, but he played 1 year. I remember some names from that team. Jerry McNamara. I mean, you know, Jim Boeheim teams have just like, you know, certain guys that play. You could almost, except for Carmelo Anthony, you could take the name off the back and it's the same guy. Jerry McNamara was the short white point guard who could shoot threes. they had Hakeem Warwick, you know, big, tall guy, long, skinny, long arms playing in the post, 14.8 points, 8.5 rebounds a game. You know, so I remember some of those guys. And I think they beat Kansas that year.
Yes, yes.
That was Roy's last game at Kansas. And what I remember about that game was after the game, he was asked about the game and how they lost. And then the interviewer said, so are you going to go to Carolina? And he was so mad about that. And, of course, the next day he did go to Carolina. He was so offended that the question was asked of him, and it turns out he was getting ready to go anyway. So,
hey, so one quick, I was looking at my notes here on Carolina beat choosing the 82 team. Mm-hmm. So you're a little much younger, not much, but somewhat younger than me. So do you know what was significant about the 82 national championship Carolina team, the 82 tournament, ACC tournament?
82 ACC tournament. No, I don't remember right off.
Well, Carolina played Virginia for the ACC championship.
The final four was
in a slowdown. Dean took the air out of the ball and went into the four corners. They had one possession that lasted 9.5 minutes.
Yeah.
Carolina beat Virginia 47-45. And it was that game that most people say led to the implementation of not only the shot clock, but the three-pointer.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because both of those went into effect the next season.
Do you remember the 5 second count at the end of that game?
Yes.
Controversial 5 second call at the end of that game.
I was not at that game. That was in the ACC tournament. They also played Carolina in the NCAA.
I thought that was the year before.
Was it 81?
Lost in the Final Four in 81 to that Al Wood team, right?
That's right. Okay. 82 was the only ACC tournament final was the slowdown game.
Slowdown game, yeah. You mentioned that led to the 3-point line and the shot clock. And I look back on it, Scott. This is jumping off from there. But when you talked about the 81 teams that made the Final Four and played in the Final Four, want to get your thought on this. My opinion, the best Ralph era team was the 81 Virginia team. Jeff Lamp, Lee Raker, Ralph Sampson. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, that team, they did lose. That team, that was at the Capitol Center, that tournament, the ACC tournament. They lost to Maryland in the semifinals and lost to Maryland. Maryland beat them handily, I think, by 20 points. So what was your question? Was that the best Ralph year?
81 team went they're the only team that went to the Final Four. So, I mean, in that way, it would qualify as the best Ralph year. But what he had around him, he had both Jeff Lamp and Lee Raker around him. He had because Jeff Lamp led that team in scoring. People don't remember that. They think Ralph would have led the team in scoring all 4 years. But he had Lamp scoring about 19 a game. He had Raker scoring in double figures. And then you had Ralph. I think that was the best chance that Ralph era had of winning a championship.
Yeah, I think so. And 82, of course, they won 30 games again, but they didn't have the supporting staff. Yeah, with Raker and Lamp. I think I would have to say the 81 season would probably, in my opinion, the 81 season was the best year of Ralph's era.
82 team lost to UAB, pretty much a road game in the NCAA tournament.
Yeah, I was at that game. It was on UAB's home floor. And it was, I think, about a 16,000 seat arena, and UVA had a fairly good contingent of maybe 3,000, but the rest was what was not UAB fans were certainly not Virginia fans. It was like a road game.
So we'll skip over Virginia. We'll go to Virginia Tech because we got two schools left in this ultimate ACC as we're just bracketing it out, and then as we're laying it out, we'll bracket it out next week. Virginia Tech. A football school, technically, they don't have a lot of history there either, but they're not a basketball school. So this one was pretty easy, actually, I think. Right, Scott?
Yeah, this one was a no-brainer. It took about 5 seconds. The 2019 Tech team, the only Tech team that has advanced far as far as the Sweet 16. They lost in the Sweet 16, barely. That was the one Houdini Duke escape. Duke should have lost that game. Duke should have lost the Central Florida game that we saw in person.
Yeah, we were there in person and saw that one, and then this one. This Virginia Tech team was pretty good. They liked that Notre Dame team of 2015. They picked the wrong year to be good.
Yeah, they picked the wrong year to be good. It was a bad year to be good for Tech because there was a lot of good teams in that conference. There was Duke. There was a team down the road, 75, 80 miles, whatever it is, down to Blacksburg, that ended up winning the national championship. Yeah, the Duke picked a bad year to be good, or Tech picked a bad year to be good.
In Carolina, there were three number one seeds out of the ACC that year. And this is the year Tech picks to have their best year ever. You need to work on that, Tech.
But this year, you could also say they picked a good year to be bad.
They picked a good year to be bad,
because they were bad this year.
Yeah, whoever was bad this year, like Georgia Tech. Think about Georgia Tech this year. They fell on their sword and said, okay, we're giving up playing in the NCAA tournament. We're not going to play. We're going to take our suspension this year.
We're so bad, we don't want to play in the tournament.
And there's no NCAA tournament. So if you're going to do it, you know. I mean, go all out. So a good year to be – there's a bad year to be good. There's a good year to be bad. And the two techs on both sides of that. That's pretty good. All right, so this one's probably pretty easy too. Now, I'll belabor it a little bit. The 81 team went to the Final Four. They had Ralph and Lamp. The 84 team shouldn't have been, and they went to the Final Four. Okay, but with that all said, who did you pick for Virginia?
Well, go back to what you just said. The Virginia team led by Ralph Sampson went to the 84. Was it the 84?
No, the 81 with Ralph.
81. They went to the Final Four, right? Yeah. But they never played in the national championship game, and they never won it. So this one was a no-brainer, 2019 national championship season, which, again, kind of, you know, there could be some argument. Do you think some debate? Pretty much like we talk about UVA baseball. The year that UVA baseball won the national championship, that was not Brian O'Connor's best team. I don't think that's even debatable.
No, that's not. No, you're right. They won the championship, but they barely made the tournament that year. Yeah.
Is there any debate that Virginia's 2019 was the best team ever?
No.
I don't think so.
And here's why. I wrote a column this week. You know, Seth Meganson and I, we're getting ready to finish up our mock NCAA tournament this weekend. And, so previewing, because I had Virginia make the Final Four, and actually the way we played it out, it probably wasn't that much of a stretch. I mean, I don't know that they would have, but ESPN's rendering of it, ESPN actually played it out with computer and had Virginia in the Final Four this year. So how you like that, UVA fans? We miss another Final Four. You know, when I wrote that, I looked at, you know, I did a column last year and I updated it for this year's numbers. We only have KenPom.com efficiency numbers that date back to 2001-2002. This was the 19th season that you have those numbers. Of the 19 seasons that there have been the ability to look at teams' adjusted offensive efficiency, adjusted defensive efficiency, arguably there are two that are the best of those 19. And those two are the 2007 Kansas team and the 2019 Virginia team. And I say it for this reason. The 2007 Kansas team finished first in the nation in adjusted offensive efficiency and third in the nation in adjusted defensive efficiency. And the Virginia team last year was second in both those categories. They're the only two teams in the 19 years that KenPom.com has run numbers like this that both offensively and defensively finished in the top five nationally. In fact, they finished both in the top three nationally. And so if you're thinking that way, this wasn't just a good Virginia team. This was a historically good national champion for the entirety of everybody. Certainly the last 20 years, this is one of the best two teams that play basketball. And so we'll have to keep that in mind when we're seeding this. And so for people out there who say, oh yeah, Chris and Scott overseeded Virginia, wherever we seed them, there's a reason for that. Wherever we end up seeding them high, I mean, if they're 1, 2, 3, whatever, with all these great teams, this was, at least for the last 20 years, this is one of the best two teams that played college basketball.
Well, the one thing we have, if we do see Virginia's 2019 national championship team that high, and there's a lot of, if you look at the list, You've got the Carolina team in 1982 when we just said that Michael Jordan, considered the greatest basketball player ever, was the third best player on that team. The NC State team on the hail, the miracle shot at the end, that's a team that would get some consideration. But the thing that we have going for us on the 2019 Virginia team is we do have those stats that you just mentioned, which I'm not sure if they even existed back in 82 or 83. We have the meat to put behind why UVA was so good last season.
And it's actually the 2008 Kansas team, but the 2007-2008 national champions, 1 in offense, 3 in defense, Virginia 2 in offense, 2 in defense. And so, I mean, you start thinking about, again, historically great teams. That is a team. Now, yeah, the numbers don't exist before 2001. So we'll have to, even that 99 team you picked from Duke, we'll have to weigh them a little differently. But this justifies, I mean, so from the standpoint of how good that team is, I just want the Virginia fans out there to know, if you don't read, sometimes I write really long, when I say some, I always write really long in-depth columns with numbers in them. And if you don't read them all word for word, shame on you, one. But two, we don't just believe last year's Virginia team was good. The numbers prove last year's Virginia team was historically good. So so now
we also got to see them in person. You know, watching them live and watching them on TV, two completely different situations, because watching them live, when you can see the whole floor and you can see all five players in action, is just amazing. Even more so on the defensive end of the floor than on the offensive end of the floor.
I'll say this though, you know, Scott, we talked earlier this week about whether or not we watched the games on TV that CBS Sports Network's been running, and I did, and I don't think you did. You know, it was after watching our team play this year with some of the same guys and some different guys, made me really appreciate last year's team. And this year's team was 23-7. They were 15-5 in the ACC. That's a pretty good team. They would have been probably a four. They finished 16th in the country in the AP poll. They would have been a 4 or 5 seed in the NCAA tournament. That's a good team. Watching last year's team, though, it's not even as much the defense. I think this year's team defensively may have been a smidge better. They had to be, because they couldn't score points. But last year offensively, oh my God, it was so different. And Tony Bennett teams have this reputation. Oh, they don't play offense. They just run the clock for 30 seconds and shoot the ball and whatever. And they, you know, win games 45-44. That's this year's team. Last year's team was good offensively. And you could see it running. I mean, just Kyle Guy, it almost seems like Kyle Guy didn't want to be wide open when he shot it. He wanted to be like running and falling off of one leg, off his butt, and his, you know, head hitting the floor and everything else for him to make a shot. You know, DeAndre Hunter just being so coolly efficient. Ty Jerome and those high bank shots, like you say, he almost hit the top of the backboard with some of these shots. How did they do the things they did? And they ran the plays. They've been together for 3 years. Watching those games again, Scott, really made me appreciate just how good that team was.
Yeah, that team was as close to perfection as you could possibly get. This is probably another topic for another broadcast, but this year, though, was Tony's, in my opinion, this was by far his best performance, his best ever coaching job, because this year he had to coach. I mean, it's not that he didn't have to coach in 2019, but you know, we weren't number two team rated team offensively.
We were number 34.
Yeah, that's a, you know, I don't care if you're not very good in math. That's pretty easy math to see. That's a pretty big drop off.
Yeah, I mean, we agreed on that. I know that Coach of the Year honors often go to the coaches with better records, and this year, slightly better record. It was because it was just slight. Leonard Hamilton won one more game in the ACC than Tony Bennett did. He's Coach of the Year in the ACC. But from the standpoint of having the 234th most efficient offense in the NCAA, the 16th most – or 15th most efficient offense – actually, I'm probably not wrong. They were the 16th most efficient offense in the ACC. There were only 15 teams. They were still 16th in the ACC in offense this year because they just weren't good. But to win 8 in a row, 11 of 12, win 15 in the ACC, and do what they did to finish the season out, Scott, we said this so many times sitting beside each other on press row. It was almost like from possession to possession, he needed to tweak the offense. He almost needed to draw up new plays in the dirt and say, can you do, hey, Kihei, can you go here? And Jay, can you go here? Because it was figuring out from game to game, minute to minute, how to score points and just enough points. And as a result, the defense had to be as good as it was. Last year, defensively, number two in the country. This year, number one. And, you know, it really looked like this year, sometimes, when, especially sitting in the arena, you know, when Scott, you're right. When you sit in the arena, it's so different. When you're on TV, you kind of have – the only thing you have is what the camera gives you. When you're there in the arena, you can kind of put your eyes where you want to and watch who you want to and how they're moving. And, you know, there is a beauty in the 30-second shot clock violation caused by a Virginia defense because they're scrambling. They're hard-hedging. They're helping out on defense behind. They're double-teaming the ball in the post, and they're making the guy spin it out, and they're recovering to get that guy. And in 30 seconds, they can't get a shot off. And that happens so many times in a game, or they get a shot off and it's a bad shot, hits us out of the backboard. It happens so often. You know, here's a stat for you, Scott. I wrote a column today on Jayhoff. He talked with us on Zoom yesterday. Did you know who the number one player in the country, and of course I've already given it away, but would you have ever guessed last year? Let me put it this way. Would you have ever guessed last year that the person ranked number one in the country in defensive rating would have been Jay Huff? But he is.
No, that doesn't surprise me.
It doesn't surprise you that Jay Huff, who played 9 minutes a game last year because he couldn't play defense, it was ranked number one in the country this year as a defensive player?
But again, watching him as many times as we did in person
this year,
yeah, he was a four. I mean, he was a game changer defensively for Virginia. Do you think it has something to do with minutes play too? Is it just looking at what's happening while he's on the floor?
It's your rating. It's basically a zone rating. It's what goes on around. It's what goes on with the guy that you're covering and what he does. And you know, his issue in years past, certainly last year, he played 9 minutes a game. He didn't play much in the NCAA tournament last year. I think he played 2 minutes in the championship game, for example. His issue was never blocking shots. He's 7'1". He's a really instinctive shot blocker. His issue's always been in the Tony Bennett defense. It's the ability to hard hedge. And when, you know, if you're a Virginia fan and you're probably familiar with the term, but when a guard runs a pick and roll, the most basic play in basketball, a center sets a pick, the guard drives around the pick, and then the defense has to figure out who do you guard. And most teams just kind of let the guard run through the screen. And what that does then is allow the point guard to get around, get in the lane, right? Well, Virginia does not allow that. The pack line is built on we do not allow the guard to get around the screen. What happens is the center has to go out and double team the ball. So you got to think now, they're double teaming the ball gets passed. What the opposing center is going to do is he's going to dive for the rim because your center is 40 feet from the basket. And so the responsibility for Jay Huff then, or Jack Salt, who played this masterfully for 4 years, your responsibility is to run back there after you've double teamed the point guard. You're 40 feet from the basket. You're 7 feet tall. You got to run back to the right to the rim where that center's gone and make sure he doesn't get a wide open pass for a dunk. And so Jay Huff could block shots for the last couple of years, but he couldn't hard hedge well enough to stay on the floor. This year, there were a couple of times, and I'm nitpicking because we watch every game and we're there in the arena for most of the games. And I could tell you there, I can remember a couple, there was one time in a Louisville game, he gave up a dunk on a hard hedge. But the game, the play you will remember from this year, the play at the end of the Duke game where he blocks the shot of Vernon Carey Jr. 5 seconds to go to clinch that game, his ninth block of the game. It was a hard hedge. Trey Jones finds Carey under the basket. He blocks the shot. He recovered and blocked the shot. He wouldn't have done that last year. That's why he's a defense. Whether he's a defensive player of the year anywhere, he's a number one rated defensive player because of that play, that kind of a play.
Yeah, that's that play will forever be etched in our minds.
My heart's beating right now just thinking about that play.
Look at that game. That was the game Dick Vitale did.
Yeah.
And Dick was all that. If you look at it again on tape. Dick was all – he was just that close. You just knew that was going to be a dunk to win the game because you could see it unfolding, the pass.
We could in the arena. Oh, my God, he's opening out of the basket. How did that happen? And then Jay recovers. Yeah.
That play will go down in Virginia history. It's hard to get that out of my mind. And as it turns out, you know, it's probably one of the last, because we didn't get a chance to play in a postseason because of what we're going through. That play may be, that's the last really play I remember Virginia basketball this year.
So I'll throw it out to you, Scott. I'm teasing to you and to the others to read this story. I just posted it a couple hours ago. So for those who haven't had a chance, as we're finishing up live here at 2 o'clock, I did, one of the questions asked of Jay yesterday was, is he thinking about testing the NBA draft waters? Now, for 20 minutes of the 21 minutes of this conversation, everything was about, I'm coming back and I can't wait to come back. He did admit that he is thinking about at least the possibility of putting his name into the draft. It sounds like more for the evaluation purposes, kind of like Mami Diakite did last year. But here's the fear I've got, Scott. You and I have been saying this since the first time we saw him play as a redshirt freshman, even as he was struggling to get minutes. 7-1 guys who can shoot threes and block shots like he does, they make a lot of money at the next level. So, you know, if he puts his name out there, you know, it may stay out there. Everything he said, again, he's thinking about – he's talking about UVA coming back next year, but he did concede that he's thinking about the possibility of throwing his name in the draft.
Well, on the surface, you think it's a good move because it could be like, first of all, we have to assume there's going to be a summer league for NBA players that he could even go and I think he could play in that, correct?
No. What he's talking about, the reason he might not throw his name, because the summer league's after you're drafted or not after the draft's over. But I think you're making a point, though, with just a different name for it. There's like the Portsmouth Invitational. There's combines and stuff like that. That's the one question that guys like Jay Huff have. Will the NBA, because right now, certainly not. The NFL can't do any of that stuff. Their draft's coming up here in a couple weeks. The NBA draft, at least theoretically, is late June. Now, if the NBA, you know, now all the questions you got to throw out there, if the NBA comes back in June, as the talk is right now, that means their draft gets pushed back a couple of months because they want to play 5 to 7 games regular season. They want to play their playoffs all the way through. So the draft then gets pushed back all the way to probably August, maybe even early September. And so what does that do for your opportunities to audition for teams? You know, last year we know Mami Diakite went out. You know, he did several individual workouts for teams. He did the combine. He did the Portsmouth Invitational, all those kind of things. And so Jay did say that, you know, whatever doesn't happen there. I mean, if he's looking at this as an evaluation tool and then there's no evaluation tools out there, it's probably not worth it. So, yeah, you made a good point there, though, that, you know, if that's not available, what's the point of doing it?
But if it is, there's an old saying, you can't coach 7'1".
And you can't coach 7'1" who can shoot threes and dribble drive from the basket and dunk the way you can too. Yeah, exactly.
Right. So there's a team out there that could possibly look at him as a project. And now that you've had this two-way contracts, yeah, that I'm not going to say it should be concerning, but you still have to keep it in the back of your mind that it is an option for Jay Huff.
As we talked, though, on Wednesday, there's 11 guys in the mix right now in the rotation. Jay would be a great player for this team, but I don't want to alarm UVA basketball fans as we're wrapping up a otherwise really positive, fun podcast.
Yeah, we want to be positive as much as possible. I don't see Jay not coming back because Jay's going to be potentially a first-team all-conference player next year.
Oh, yeah. And then he, you know, right now we're talking about him being a second-round or fringe pick. He comes back and develops even more next year. He's a first round pick, no question. So, all right, Scott. So your homework the next few days is to you've picked the teams. We've told all the people about the teams. Now you just got to get out there and I'm gonna let you see them. You think you can take this on? I mean, if you have questions for me, you know, I'll weigh in, but I want you to see these teams.
Well, let me go to my calendar and pick my calendar up. Yeah, I can do that. I don't have anything on the calendar.
You got some free time this weekend. That's good to know.
Got free time. So I may throw a couple of surprises into the seating, but, you know, that's what will make it fun.
It'll make it fun. Well, that'll work for us. So I want to thank all those who tuned in live. Got a lot of good likes and other things on the Facebook Live. And for those listening on the podcast or watching the archive of this, thank you for joining us. And yeah, we're going to keep this going here. We'll get Scott back on Monday, and we'll try to work in Scott Ratcliffe, Jerry Ratcliffe, as well into our regular rotation here with Scott. But you know, from AFP standpoint, Crystal Graham and I are going to do the news updates on a weekday basis, and Scott and I will be doing the sports updates on the afternoons on weekdays. And so got a little good thing going here, and we got some positive feedback from the last one, Scott. I think your daughter, who is a media professional, actually had some good positive comments about the first show we did the other day.
Yes, she said we didn't look sick.
We didn't look sick. So, yeah, that's right. Trying to look healthy. Scott had to he had to get the makeup artist to help him out today a little bit, right?
Yeah, so yeah, I had a playtime with my doggy who put a big gouge in the side of my head, so I had to go into makeup a little early.
What this does for me is it just gives me an excuse to shave my head clear every day. So, you know, I can look like Eric Bakker, I guess. You know, UVA sports fans, UVA media people would definitely know.
You know, Chris, one thing I was listening to, my go-to at night now is talk radio, and they had a player from the Yankees on sports talk show out of New York last night. And what we can do, and I know this, but I think we all of us sports people, we know that sports is not as important as we thought it was. This is kind of a dose of reality, but it's still important. It does give us the diversion, and we want to see sports come back. So what we can do as individuals is by staying home, we can make this go away a little quicker. So we can all do our part.
Yeah, and that's a great question. So we found, I had a dog barking out there too. I wonder if they're all going to say anything. There's definitely that is it. We want sports to come back. We want baseball. We want basketball back. We definitely want football in the fall. We want college basketball in the fall and winter. And the way that happens is if we can just do the best we can to stay home. You know, like Crystal today, for example, my wife, she went out. We did the thing where you have one person shop instead of sending both people out. So you're clogging the stores up with more people. We're trying to buy, like we bought probably 2 weeks worth of groceries today. So we have a house full of groceries. And so you're not going out as often. Just little things like that. Right now, the quicker we can get this down, the quicker we can get what we want back. And then we can actually talk about real things again, Scott.
Yeah. I like the saying that I've seen a lot, you're not stuck at home, you're safe at home.
There you go. I like that. So, well, for our viewers out there, thanks for joining us here. Scott, stay on the line. We'll chat after this is over. I'm going to go ahead and end the Facebook Live and say, Augusta Free Press, thank you for joining us. Have a great weekend, everybody.